Lawrence Wright, you're also a playwright. You've done two one-man shows, My Trip to Al-Qaeda, which was turned into a documentary aired on HBO, and The Human Scale, which tells the story of a conflict in between Arabs and Israelis. You're now working on a play which runs through April 21st at Berkeley Rep in Berkeley, California, called Falaci, which is about Oriana Falaci, the famous interviewer who went from left to right after 9/11. And I understand this is the story of a young Iranian woman sent by the New York Times to write her obituary, who has a discussion with Oriana Falaci. How did you come to Oriana Falaci and the idea of writing this play?
Well, I was originally asked to write a one-woman show about her. And, you know, Oriana Falaci, you know, when we were young, she was the most famous journalist in the world. And I don't know about you, but she made journalism sexy to me and, you know, made it important. And she prefigured the woman's movement. So to have this tiny Italian woman bring world leaders to their knees and have them like it somehow. I mean, that was she was able to plumb to the depths of a person's soul, it seemed. I was very affected by her. But after 9/11, she went off in this direction, this anti-Islamic screed that she wrote. I felt that her views could not go unchallenged. So I decided to create another character that would carry on a relationship with Oriana. And I made her an Iranian-American, in part because I wanted a Muslim, and I wanted a woman. And also, Iran was the scene of Oriana's greatest triumph, which was her interview with Ayatollah Khomeini, the first Westerner to interview Khomeini after the 1979 Iranian Revolution. And most notably, in the middle of the interview, she ripped off her chador and, exposed her hair and face to she said, I'm going to take off this stupid medieval rag, was the way she phrased it. That made a real impression on me. So after I wrote the first couple of drafts of that, I was looking at it and I thought, you know, this woman that I've created, the Iranian-American, reminds me a great deal of Christiane Amanpour. And I know Christiane, so I sent her a draft of it, and I said I didn't knowingly copy your life, but I did think, you know, you should take a look at this to see if it's okay with you. And she got back to me, and she said, oh, my God, it's so weird. She said, in the play, you know, your character finds Oriana through Rizzoli's bookstore. I did the same thing. I went to Rizzoli's and they helped me track her down. And I went to see her before 9/11 and after 9/11. And, you know, so many parallels that I had simply made up had actually been the case with Christiane and her relationship with Oriana Falaci.
Maybe you've gone clear and can...
No doubt.
I understand it's gone through a lot of permutations. I mean, at one point there was an intermission, and as we're speaking, there's no intermission.
I don't think there'll be an intermission, but, for me, writing, I don't know who said writing is rewriting, but that's my experience. I get a draft of a project and I just continually rewrite it, like going clear. When we finally went to the publisher, it was the 47th draft. You know, not all of those are major rewrites, but, you know, the idea that you're continually revising and the process here in Berkeley, as I'm listening to the actors do the parts, I can see where, you know, something might be out of place, or, you know, it might be said more felicitously, or it might not need to be said at all. So all of those things are part of the process for me during the rehearsal period here.
But there's also the idea of writing fiction itself. I mean, this event didn't happen. This woman didn't go there.
Right.
So in terms of that, does that allow you freedom? Does it tie you up? How do you feel about it?
Well, you know, even though it is fiction, I think all of my plays, and that's true, I guess, of my movies as well, you know, I like to write about real events and real people. And Falaci's words, as much as possible, come from her writing and her speeches and so on. A lot of it is actually what she said, but it's placed into service of this conversation. I think of this, you know, my work, you know, I've done these one-man shows that are about my own experience, but I think of my work as being kind of nonfiction theater. Basically, you know, this is Oriana Falaci. These are her words. This is the character that you encounter when you go to the theater. But the challenge I had was to make my other character as real as Oriana Falaci. And I love that. She's based, her name is Mariam. She's based on a lot of Muslim women I've known. You know, I spent a long time in the Muslim world. I lived in Egypt, but after 9/11, I spent a considerable time working on the looming tower. And the plight of Muslim women became very vivid to me. So a lot of what I learned about that, the wounds that so many of them carry, are embedded in the character that I created for this play.
You've also are currently working on two other plays, one on the Camp David Accords.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of a similar idea of using real people with more or less what they said?
Yeah. This is the Carter, Begin, Sadat summit, the only one that ever produced an enduring peace treaty in the Middle East. And it's a great example of leadership because it was very hard to obtain. It was 13 days in Camp David. And in order to research this, I went down to Plains, Georgia, and talked to President and Mrs. Carter. I went to Israel and Egypt and talked to the surviving members of their negotiating teams. And I read as much as I could of all the documents and books and memoirs about that period. And out of that, I compiled an account of what happened during those 13 days. And I try to make it adhere as much as possible to the real events. And they're dramatic enough. I don't have to invent too much because it was constantly on the edge of failure.
And the other play is something about the making of the movie Cleopatra. That's a
I know. It does seem like it's a stretch for me, but I started this before 9/11. I was fascinated by, you know, when I was a young teenager, they were making Cleopatra in Rome, and suddenly Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor had this very public affair. Up until that time, I was pretty convinced that movie stars didn't actually have sex. You know, they were so carefully controlled by studios, their behavior was, you know, suddenly you have Elizabeth Taylor, who was the most famous woman in the world by far. Congress had a bill to keep her from returning to the United States. The Vatican condemned her. This was a huge, huge deal, and I cannot tell you how titillated I was by this. I think it heralded the onset of the sexual revolution. I think that was really the opening note to it. And it's also hugely funny. Because I started it before 9/11, there were still some people alive from the working on that set, and I interviewed the publicist and interviewed the son of Joseph Mankiewicz, who was the director, and the son had been on the set, and Rosemary Matthews, who was the script supervisor, and married Joe Mankiewicz. They had a romance on the set as well. So I had an opportunity to talk to a lot of the people that were there, and put it all together in this wonderful stew that I call Cleo. And I sure hope we can get a production of that because it's one of my very favorite projects I've ever had.
Last answer about God's Favorite and Noriega, God's Favorite. Now, both of them were fiction?
Yeah. You know, you remember when we invaded Panama. This was during Bush 1. And Noriega took to the hills, and then he wound up inside the Papal Nuncio's palace, and American troops surrounded it and started blasting rock music like "These Boots Are Made for Walking" and other stuff, and driving the nuns mad. But the whole idea was to try to force Noriega out of the papal nunciature. And I thought it was a very comic scene, and I originally thought it would be a good play. But it didn't work as a play because Noriega is a very kinetic figure, and I couldn't, I had to put him in action. And so I wrote it originally as a screenplay, and Oliver Stone was going to make it. He had actually cast the movie, and I bought a house on his assurance that he was going to make it, and then he decided not to. And so I decided I would write a novel based on it, and then unfortunately Roger Spottiswood, another fine director, made the movie with Bob Hoskins.
Lawrence Wright, Fallaci, is that eventually going to go on to the public? Because I know that Oscar Eustace is the director.
I hope so. I would love for that to happen. Oscar directed me in my one-man show, The Human Scale, in New York and Israel. And I'm having a wonderful time with Oscar here in Berkeley. And, you know, if my ambition to see the play move forward, but we certainly have got off to a good start here.
As we've been talking about this whole thing, I see two strains. One is your interest in extremism and beliefs, and the other is your work as a reporter to uncover them. You know, over this 20-year stretch, has there been anything that's changed within you that you've learned about either yourself or the human spirit, you think?
Well, I've learned a lot by, you know, pursuing the course that I have. I've been so struck by the power of belief to transform individuals and society for good and ill. I used to be very religious as a young man, and I'm not now. But I sure understand how radical changes can be brought about simply through the power of belief. I don't think we respect it enough because it can be great. It can be terribly, terribly dangerous.
And Oriana Fallaci herself, her beliefs completely shifted, and that shifted who she was.
Yeah, and she's such a powerful figure and such a great rhetorician that her language about Islam became the language of the anti-Islamic movement, especially in Europe. And you know, the rage, well, her book was called The Rage and the Pride. You know, the rage that she directed towards Islam, and what she thought of as the assault on Western civilization, that has really framed the debate inside the West, and especially in Europe.
Lawrence Wright, now you've finished Going Clear. It's out, and you can kind of relax in a way about that, and you're working on your plays. You started work on another book yet?
No, I'm looking for one. This is always the hardest part for me, is finding the next project. And you know, there are all these workshops about, you know, the process, but I think the big mystery in creation is knowing what you want to devote your life to. So I'm looking for that next thing.